Welcome to Garden DC, the podcast about everything gardening in the Washington, D.C. and Mid-Atlantic region. I'm your host, Kathy Gents. I'm the editor of Washington Gardener magazine, and we're aimed at gardening enthusiasts, people who grow everything from edibles to ornamentals, natives to exotics. If it grows in our area, that's what we talk about. Welcome to episode 180 of the Garden DC podcast. In this episode, we talk with Ethan Kaufman, director of Stonely, a newish public garden near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The plant profile is on African violets, and we share what's going on in the garden, as well as some upcoming local gardening events and garden tasks in the What's New segment. We close out with the last word on thankfulness by Christy Page of Green Prince. This episode, we're joined by Ethan Kaufman. He is the director of Stonely, a natural garden, and that is located in Villanova, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Ethan.
Thank you, Kathy. It's a real pleasure to be here today.
Great to have you on. And I've visited Stonely a few times over the past few years, and so we're going to talk all about that kind of newish public garden for the Mid-Atlantic area. But before we dive into all of that, Ethan, we want to talk about you and your background, and we're going to dial it back all the way. And I'm going to ask you, were you born with a green thumb and chlorophyll in your veins, or did gardening come to you later in life?
You know, that's a great question. And to answer it shortly, no, I was definitely not born with chlorophyll in my veins or a green thumb. I was into insects and animals and always thought I was going to be a zoologist. And that's why I majored in college was biology. And so when I got out, I remember looking at the newspaper, you know, back when we looked at newspapers for jobs. And, you know, there was a job at a corn farm, a research farm locally. So I said, you know what, that's kind of related. And that's what I did. I worked that job for the summer. It was a labor job. And then the employee there, I guess he liked me, referred me to a local nursery, and I started there. Just as a you know, entry-level position.
Hmm. And where did you grow up, Ethan? It wasn't in the Mid-Atlantic, correct?
It was. Actually, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania is where I grew up. And it was really wonderful because I grew up in the southern part of the county as well as the city. So I had a lot of access to the Susquehanna River, which if you've been, it's really beautiful in southern Lancaster County. So it really helped me kind of with my love of the natural world, which I think we all have, right? If we garden, we all love nature and sort of all of the bounty and beauty that it brings to our world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Lancaster County, or is it Lancaster? I always pronounce it wrong.
No, it's Lancaster, but most people say Lancaster, but us locals yep. know that it's Lancaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a gorgeous area, and you know, the dream is to retire to a farm there, right? So gorgeous.
Yeah.
So you started at the nursery, and then how did you make your way into public horticulture?
Well, I started at the nursery, and you know, it was local. And actually, at the time, I had a girlfriend in South Carolina where I went to college. And so, of course, like any young guy or young person, I wanted to be with my partner down there. And so I just moved down without a job, and I happened to see that there's a local zoo, Riverbank Zoo. And it's a really great zoo, actually. And so I saw there was an advertisement for a horticulturist part-time. I thought, I'm not even sure what that is, but I did this nursery thing for a little bit, so I'll go for it. And I remember this interview where they asked me like some plant ID questions, and I didn't even know what a canna was. And you know, in the South, cannas are ubiquitous. And so somehow they gave me the job, and I was pretty clueless. You know, do you remember back in your early stages of learning gardening and horticulture? Like, I remember asking, how long should you water a planter? Like, I didn't know how long to put a hose on a planter. And but once I really, after a year, kind of got into it, oh man, I fell in love with it. And it's been sort of my lifelong passion ever since. And if you really love something, it's joyful, you know, and you like to learn on your own, and you like to experience it. You like to talk to others and learn from them. And I think that's what I did or have done throughout my career.
Mm-hmm. And I think that passion really shows, Ethan. And so how long ago did you join Stonely?
I've been here, it's hard to believe, but 7 years this year. So it's been a couple of years now.
And let's talk about Stonely a little bit. And
It's owned by the Natural Lands Trust, but it has a really interesting history, so you can encapsulate that for us.
Yeah, and I did want to mention Natural Lands. They're the organization that we're part of, and it's this really wonderful nonprofit regional land conservation organization. And we care for 42 nature preserves. They're free, open to the public. It consists of about 23,000 acres, so it's a lot of land and really some of the most spectacular and diverse landscapes in our region. And like I said, I'm a nature boy, so I love going to these preserves. We have, 300,000 people, we estimate, use these preserves every year. So we're really, really excited to be part of this organization that has such a wonderful ethos that really informs what we're doing here.
And so Stoneleigh was a private home and estate when it was first established, or going back to the origins of Stoneleigh?
That's right. So it was actually donated to Natural Lands. That's why I mentioned it. I'll just talk a little more about the organization. But it was donated to Natural Lands in 2016, and it was a private estate for 150 years. Previous to that, it was agricultural, and it was settled by colonialists in the 1690s. And then before that, of course, for millennia, it was stewarded by the Lenape tribe here.
And the family who owned the estate, they were huge gardeners, or at least tree lovers, from what I've seen at the location.
Yeah, they were tree lovers, and it was the Haas family. The Haas family lived here for 80 years, and such an incredible family. Their philanthropy is widely known in this region, but Stoneleigh is really an amazing gift, not only to, of course, horticulture, but really to our community, because of their generosity, we're able to open this garden free of charge, and we think that's really special.
I think so too. And you have a kind of interesting setup there in that the house, or the mansion, the big house on the property, also contains an organ collection.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It is. We have another nonprofit that's based in that house called the Oregon Historical Society. They have this really cool pipe organ from 1931. It's really fabulous. And I think music and gardens have a long history of partnership. So we're able to have events where the organ's played in partnership with them. And it's really kind of neat to mention to the garden experience, in the inside of the house.
And was the Haas family related to the pipe organ industry, or in any way, or how did that come about?
Well, one of the Haas family members who grew up at Stoneleigh, he actually learned to play the organ there. And as he grew older, became his passion. And so he supports numerous organs, especially restoration and other programs in the community and more broadly. And so it was a really natural fit during that planning process with Stoneleigh. If you've never heard an organ, like when you're in the, ours is in the basement, if you've never heard an organ while it's playing, it's kind of this really incredible experience. You feel it in the depths of your soul. It's so loud. There's this richness, and when these big firecrackers boom, that's what it feels like close up. So it's really neat.
Yeah, and is the family still involved in Stoneleigh at all?
They're really supportive of what we're doing, and certainly come back and visit us. And so they're again a really wonderful part of Stoneleigh's story, and really kind of honored to continue their legacy here.
And I think, Ethan, that the first time I heard about Stoneleigh was getting an email several years ago saying, "Save Stoneleigh." And I was like, "What's Stoneleigh?" and urging me to share it with my readers at Washington Gardener Magazine and other activists who love public gardens in the area. And that was about the school district that you're in trying to obtain the land by eminent domain, I think for bus parking, and then later on for expanding like soccer fields.
Well, Kathy, I have to tell you, you're not the only one that learned about Stoneleigh from that. In fact, I think it was very on. Actually, right before we opened, so most people hadn't heard of Stoneleigh. And yeah, the local school district was looking for a new space to build their middle school, and sought to take Stoneleigh through eminent domain, put the new middle school and ball fields here. And so, an audience here, an audience that values open space, an audience that values cultural amenities like public gardens, and so they were really activated and were instrumental in getting the attention of state government, who passed a law that helped protect Stoneleigh. And so, before we even opened, we were almost closed. And luckily, it worked out for the best. And because of that, we really did get a lot of support early on from people that didn't know about us. So there was a really big silver lining to this whole story.
Yeah, I think it got my attention right away, Ethan. And I said, yes. I want to run up there and see this estate before it's gone. And, you know, it sounded so dire. So I'm so glad that it all worked out in the end. So let's talk for our listeners who might be outside the Mid-Atlantic U.S. area a bit about the growing zone and conditions where you are. So it's technically in Villanova, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, we're about 14 miles outside of the city. It's a suburban location. And, you know, if you're not from this area, you know, I spent 20 years in the South. And so when I came back here 7 years ago, I was amazed at the soil. It's like this rich black soil. And then you have these enormous trees. I don't think trees grow anywhere else in the country as tall as they do in this region. And I know a lot of that has to deal with that they were planted very early on, but also this the richness of the soil, the climate, the rain. It's a really special place for gardening.
And is it a rocky soil or clay?
We do have some rocks, but it's very nutrient rich. And where we are, actually, it's only, it's just a little slightly basic. I wish it were a little more acidic, but it's slightly basic here. And so you have to give always what the garden, you have to take what the garden gives you, and we just plant accordingly. But most things thrive really well.
Yeah, I just note the name is Stone Lee. So I was thinking, there must have been a lot of stones on this site when it was first named, or that could have been a legacy name from the family.
You know, we don't know how it got the name Stone Lee. One thought is, you know, there was an estate in England called Stone Lee, and the original family that built Stone Lee, the Smith family, he was a railroad magnate, and he actually went to England slightly before Stone Lee was built. And may have visited an estate that was called Stoneley and may have come back and then modeled this after that one. We don't know for sure. It's our best guess right now. Kind of fun.
Yeah, I could see that inspiration. So yeah. The other part of the name is Stoneley, a natural garden. So what makes it a natural garden?
You know, it's like when you have this opportunity to build a new garden, sometimes you have an open grass setting or field or a vacant lot or a vacant space. But for us, it was this former estate, which is fairly common, I think, in gardens. But what we were doing is taking this traditionally managed landscape and reimagining it with native plants and sustainable landscape practices. So that's where the natural garden comes in. And the natural garden is also sort of a play on Natural Lands, the organization that we're a part of. But when I think of a natural garden, I think people sometimes think that it could be a little bit wild, a little bit unmanicured. And we have a lot of those elements, but I think we really also are working to create a sophisticated garden filled with native plants and using them in really unique and interesting ways.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed when visiting there, it's not exclusively natives. And of course, the legacy trees on the property, some of those beautiful older trees, are not going to be native.
That's right. We love our non-native trees just as much as our native ones. We steward them. And, you know, if they do die, though, we will come back and replace it with a native tree species. But we have a lot of non-native trees. And, you know, they're part of our landscape and they're part of everyone's landscape. And really, that's sort of what we're all dealing with. There's no reason to, you know, get rid of non-native trees just because they're not native. It's nonsensical as long as they're not invasive or bringing diseases.
Mm-hmm. And there are some incredible trees on that property. Do you have a favorite one, Ethan?
Oh my gosh. You know, I think about that question a lot because we do have a lot of really magnificent trees. And I think my favorite might be, we have this Quercus macrocarpa, and it's so wide. It's been allowed to grow unfettered, you know, it didn't have competition to push it narrow and upward. So it's wide as it is tall. And it's, when I walk under it, I feel this sense of calm and this sense of security under its boughs. I don't know, it's hard to explain, but I feel a connection with this tree, and probably my favorite.
Is that the one located, I would call it near the back driveway entrance to the house?
It is kind of back that way. Yeah.
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 Okay. That is the one I've probably taken 20 photos of.
Oh, so beautiful.
That's such a beautiful, yeah, such a beautiful tree. And I'm like, one day I wish my oaks would look like that, but
I know.
Sadly, yeah.
And I think about trees like that and our connection with them. You know, I think sometimes we just sort of take them for granted. Of course, we always appreciate them, but really they influence, I don't know, I feel like so many aspects of our lives, whether we know it or not, kind of like architecture. And, you know, they're comforting and they're one of the few things in the natural world that live as long as we do or longer. And so I think we kind of have a kinship with them because of that. And we see them decline too as they age. And, you know, I think we can see ourselves reflected in that. And it's really unique.
So true. And I don't think that Stoneleigh is a certified arboretum. Am I correct in that?
We're not a certified arboretum yet. We're working on it. And we, you know, we do have a really diverse tree collection. And we have about at least 700 taxa of native trees, which is pretty good in a 7-year period. So, you know, we really value diversity in our landscapes with our plants and our woody plants. And so we're always actively looking for all these exciting new selections and wild collected species and interesting species that are responsibly collected, you know, seeds or cuttings that we grow.
Mm-hmm. I think I remember there was a gorgeous weeping katsura there, whispering hemlock, and that you have two of the Pennsylvania state champion trees on the property.
Yeah, we do. A number of them are in the top 10, but we do have two state champions. One is somewhat arcane, you know, it's a pendant linden, silver linden. And then the other one is a carpinus, the European ironwood. And that one's, it's got sort of this broken down form. It's in a, you know, part of the property that not most people see, but it's got this really incredible aging, also a really beautiful tree. Yeah, we have some spectacular trees here. Which are the legacy of so many others who cared for the space before we did.
Yeah, I think I love that stage of trees when they're starting to lay their branches down on the ground almost and go horizontal more than vertical. And I was thinking in particular, you have a Franklinia tree on the property that's being supported by these little uprights because it's starting to do that.
Yeah, that Franklinia, it's a really old one, and it's got really interesting character. Like you said, it's sort of leaning. It's much longer than it is tall at this point. But what a cool tree, right? What a great tree. It flowers at a unique time, tells such a great story, and it's a really way to captivate, you know, casual garden guests about the power of plants and sort of the lasting impact.
Mm-hmm. And I've been so fortunate to be there twice while it was blooming. And I was like, yes, I got to get those photos of that because I probably will never own one in my lifetime or at least successfully grow it.
They're hit or miss, right? I know. We're lucky to have these already established. And people always say they look like fried eggs, which I kind of agree with the flowers. They kind of look like fried eggs, I would say.
I don't think about fried eggs. I always think of just like an open camellia or some type of, you know,
that
type of look. But I could see that. I could see the fried eggs.
It's making me hungry, actually, to think that.
So when a visitor arrives at Stoneleigh, can we walk them through their experience? So they would probably park in the parking lot, and then there's a little bit of an entrance kind of gazebo-type building or welcome kiosk. It's not like a visitor center that you go through at, say, a large public garden.
That's right. Yeah, we're really fortunate to have a really supportive and engaged volunteer base. They're amazing people. And so we have volunteers that station this welcome kiosk every day and on the weekends. And also we have staff on the weekends too. And so if you come, you're likely to be greeted by a really friendly and warm person who's willing to tell you about the garden, show you some of the highlights and any other questions you might have. And then once you walk through there, you know, you start seeing these really majestic trees and sort of the space opens up. Like a lot of lawn that we're working, you know, of course, to transition to other you know, either meadow or beds. But this lawn kind of gently slopes up to this big house that sits on top of a small hill. And it's really kind of a nice first sight, and it makes you want to just explore more and see what else is here.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like a really charming English country style vista looking up to the main house when we're coming in that way. And then after you cross the Great Lawn, you have a couple choices in which way you want to go. And I'm going to go towards the Catalpa Court, if you could talk a little bit about that.
That's a way I would go too. You know, that's one of our newest gardens. And it it was the site, Catalpa Court was the site of the tennis court that was there for, I don't know, 100 years. And when we came, we didn't think we were going to be playing a lot of tennis in the public garden, so we did rip it out. But also, there's this really titanic catalpa that sort of towers over this space. And when we came, we knew it was a perfect placeholder for a new garden space. We didn't know 5 years ago what that was going to be, but we did have a family member from the second family that lived at Stoneleigh. There were three families that lived as a private estate, and she was a member of the Bodine family. And so she supported this brand new garden space. We were able to build this new water garden, and we didn't have any water at Stoneleigh, which is kind of unusual. You said an English landscape garden. That's what sort of the original feel of this garden was, but we had no water. So because of her generosity, we put in this about 70 by 18 kind of horizontal black granite water garden where the water spills over the stainless steel lips, and we planted the inside of it. And it's really neat because it's biofiltrated, so no chemicals, really friendly to wildlife. And it's been a big hit with wildlife. We have seen tons of birds and tadpoles and all these other neat things in there. But kids love it too, and people and students. It's really contemplative space because of the sound of the water. Mm-hmm. Definitely a guest favorite.
Yeah, I think it's gorgeous. I love that it's kind of raised. It's almost more like a long water table than an in-ground water garden. And I think it's very modern looking too. So it's kind of a surprise when you come through and see it.
Yeah, that's a great observation. And kind of what we've been trying to do is we don't want to be stodgy and stuffy. We want this to be a comfortable and accessible garden and very welcoming to everybody. So as we're reimagining this and reinterpreting this garden, we don't want to come back and build these traditional gray, somber structures. So we want to be creative, and we want to honor the existing components, but we also want to bridge that gap with a more modern feel, a more contemporary approach, which is how we approach our gardening as well.
And then going past that towards the pool house where the restrooms are, there are bog gardens built into the ground. They're these kind of like kiddie pool sized circles that are just astounding, I must say, Ethan. I think I could spend all day examining these little bog gardens.
Oh, thanks for saying that, Kathy. I think everybody loves a bog garden. I love bog gardens. They're so charismatic, right? Because you have these small spaces where you can really take some time to appreciate what's going on. And when you look, you see these really almost alien plants, like literally trumpets that insects crawl down and they don't come out of. Or they're sundews, they're really sticky, and gnats and ants and things get stuck on these things, or orchids. So all of these really specialized plants grow in bogs, and they're so much fun. I mean, they're like, I don't know, the rock stars of the native plant world in some ways, of perennials.
Mm-hmm. And they're like these perfect circles, and I think that was where the in-ground pool was, and these are just kind of cut out and set into it.
Yeah, there was, again, it's kind of like the tennis court when we came. There was a swimming pool, and it was kind of cool because it was amorphous. It wasn't this oval. It was sort of this undulating shape, but this was a central spot in the garden. So we did take it out, and we came back, and again, we wanted to have more of a contemporary or modern feel to the space. So we did the bluestone that now exists there in the outline of the old pool, but then we did come back with those round bog gardens. And that's really kind of a nod to the circle garden, which was a space that was designed, I don't know, about 1900. It's a very prominent part of the garden. And so that's sort of a nod to that design that flows over into the pool house.
Mm-hmm. In the circle garden, you kind of step down into this, almost like a woodland rest area, I would call it, like when you're just walking through the woods and then all of a sudden there's a clearing.
Exactly right. And some people would call it a sunken garden, and it was first designed. It was actually designed by Pentecost and Vitale. They were the first two landscape architects there. And there was a sort of a knot garden in there. So there are all these beds with roses and perennials. But then in the 20s, when the Olmsted brothers came to Stoneleigh, they had this year relationship with the property. But when they came in the 20s, they turned this kind of rose garden into a croquet court. So now we have what's that. It's just, it's flat turf in this space. And as you said, it's a clearing, but we like it because it's a great event space. We've hosted Shakespeare plays there. We've had some Gilbert and Sullivan performances, and we plan to keep it open because it is calming to your eyes too. But again, a great space for our guests to gather.
I could totally see having, you know, any type of performance there, or putting up a tent for a wedding or something like that in that space.
Yes, except we don't do weddings here, but I could see how that would be, it would be a lovely, lovely space for a wedding.
So no weddings at Stoneleigh, but there are other things permitted that some other public gardens don't. And I noticed you do welcome picnicking, and you do let folks bring their dogs.
Well, we do. I should say we do have rentals of our main house. So mm-hmm. Corporate events or private parties, but mm-hmm. we also certainly encourage picnics. I think this notion of gardens being these precious spaces that can't be disturbed may be a little bit outdated, and so they need to be places that are comfortable to everybody. And as long as we can manage sort of if there's any waste that comes with that or disruptions, but so far it's been pretty good. But we do love dogs, and as part of Natural Lands, we have some preserves that are very close by, so we don't allow dogs at Stoneleigh, but we have some places that are perfect, that are just a mile or two away, that are really perfect to bring your dogs.
Okay, good to note that. So we left off our tour of the grounds in the Circle Garden, but we can't forget the rockery, which I believe the Olmsted Brothers firm had a hand in.
The rockery, they did. So that was one of the areas that they designed. And we have these really neat sepia pictures from about 1910 when they were building this, and there were no trees, and they were like craning these big rocks into place. And it's one garden that really fantasized about renovating. We haven't done it yet. But you know how in gardens, you know, that's kind of what we do, right? We dream about what it's going to be. Even when it's there, we still keep dreaming because it's never there. And mm-hmm. so this is one area that we just, we can't wait to sink our teeth into as a future project, but certainly a unique aspect of the property.
And then the last portion of the garden in my tour was the Meadow Vista, also courtesy of the Olmsted Brothers.
Yeah, it's a really fabulous sort of view looking down the other side of the house. That it slopes down to the other part of the property. And, you know, right now, like I mentioned, we still have a lot of turf, but what we've done is let it grow long, and we manage it that way. It's much better for, I think it looks prettier, but also we're not mowing it, and wildlife likes it and uses it so much more. But we use it as a placeholder too. We envision, again, that whole dreaming thing. We envision one day that meadow would stretch from the main house all the way down almost to the next street, 5-acre area. So right now it's grass that's what we call no-mow, but we can't wait till it's actual meadow.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions, Ethan, of you, was the maintenance of the meadow area. So it's just like a once-a-year cutback?
Yeah, and I should actually mention that meadow. There is a meadow at the bottom. It's probably half an acre right now at the bottom mm-hmm. of this Meadow Vista. And we actually cut certain sections back every third year, because that helps with insect life cycles. So we'll do a third of it 1 year, and then do a rotational basis that way.
And so are you planning on any festivals or public events, like a plant sale or anything like that, in the calendar for Stoneleigh?
We are. You know, of course, building a public garden is amazing, but the real reward is when everybody comes, and when people started coming, it's incredible. And we're just happy to be an essential part of this community. And so we have one of our most favorite events is the plant sale in the spring. That is the last weekend in April, the 27th and 28th of April. It's so much fun. We have a lot of folks that come out, and they're regulars, and we try to offer tried and true favorites, but also some of the really weird and cool stuff that we're growing here at Stoneleigh is a lot of fun.
So it's all native plants at that plant sale?
It is. And some of them are some of the ones, you know, so we grow a lot of those plants on site that we sell, but we also get them from a lot of really great vendors too. And we try and make an effort to offer different things every year. You know, there's some, as I said, you know, some tried and true favorites that people always are interested in. But I think we're going to offer close to 200, I think 220 varieties this year. So it's a pretty good subsidy.
And you mentioned a lot of that you're growing on site at Stoneleigh. Are you growing from seed? Are you propagating from the plants already on the property?
We're growing a lot from seed, from cuttings, from divisions, from plants on the property. We also, you know, I mentioned Natural Lands, and we have all these nature preserves. We go out and collect from these seeds from these nature preserves and grow those and plant a lot of them in the garden. But we also sell a lot of them at our plant sale. So it's really, you get local genetics, you get these plants that are part of our kind of regional world. So to me, plants from wild collected origin are just really special. You know, they have a story to them. They're the plants that we share this space with. So we kind of value those here a good deal. And I think a lot of the people that come do as well.
And I know that there's one section, and I can't remember where it is exactly in the garden. There's kind of a hedge, a mixed hedge of different, I think, native shrubs.
Yeah, we have this, we call it the wildlife hedge, Kathy. And it's, you know, we're always trying to experiment here and try new things and push our comfort level. And, you know, you talk about catalpa court, and we came, there was just this big green space, right, with the catalpa tree. And there was a pathway beside it. And there was no dividing line, and it was just sort of this weird open space. So we want to bring a hedge in here and sort of start creating some more intrigue in the garden. So we put in this 200-foot long hedge that has, you know, 60 or 70 different woody plant taxa in it, mixed together. And it's like, you know, not only is it, I think, more visually interesting, it's double rowed too, staggered, mm-hmm. and about 8 feet tall. But also, you know, it supports such a more broad array of wildlife than a monoculture, and it's more resilient. So it's a lot of fun. We have things like hydrangea arborescens and variegated cerces and all kinds of things you wouldn't think to put in a hedge, oxydendron, sourwood, and then some things that work really well, like arborvitae and hollies and viburnum. And then we have vines growing through this too, like honeysuckle and clematis. And we just now started shearing the top, so we're starting to give it its shape, but I can't wait to see what it looks like in a couple of years.
Yeah, I think what I was seeing is it was starting to fill in, but starting to get pretty dense, so I was wondering about that future maintenance of it.
You know, it's a funny thing. People always say, like, don't you have those things a little close together? I'm like, yeah, that's how people plant hedges. You know, I think people just aren't used to seeing these species used in this way. You see an arborvitae hedge and they're planting on like 2 foot centers, you know. I think it's just reevaluating what we use as hedges. And that's what we're really, another thing we're interested in doing here. You know, we're trying all these different as hedges. And I think that's what's exciting about native plants, because people haven't done a hedge of upland swamp privet very often. You know, you know, it just hasn't been done that much. So there are all these new opportunities and you know, it's just so exciting. I love gardens. I love what we do. And it gives, I think you're the same way, you know, it gives us endless joy and learning opportunities. And you only know a fraction of it. And it's great.
And can you talk about some of the future of Stoneleigh, maybe some projects that are in the planning stages?
You know, we have 42 acres here, and we really have so many more areas to develop. But, you know, we have a small team. There are 8 full-time staff here. It's 2 interns and some great part-time folks. And I want to give a shout-out to the team, the Stoneleigh team, by the way. They are incredible. They're amazing. They're inspiring. And, you know, we're really fortunate to have such great folks here. But we, I think, are thinking about the Oval Garden, which I don't know if you're familiar with that one. It's got sort of that strange, well, I don't want to say strange, but it has sort of the heart-shaped paisley design in it, which feels a little bit out of place in this garden. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different. It's more like almost Victorian looking.
Yes. That's what we think too. And we're kind of like, you know what? But it's part of the Olmsted, it's the original Olmsted design. And we do want to kind of design in the spirit of that. And so we're going to keep that framework, but we're going to create a room out of it. We're going to replace those white arbors, which look kind of funny to me too. They seem almost, you know, like you said, a little Victorian, but we're going to do something hopefully really creative in that space. And it's so fun to reimagine these spaces. And I think we all get such a kick out of kind of coming up with new ideas and seeing how we can keep the spirit, but bring it to, you know, kind of a way that we should be managing our landscapes today.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the staff who do a great job, but you also have volunteers. How can one volunteer at Stoneleigh?
Well, yeah, we couldn't do without our volunteers. Just like the staff makes this go and the volunteers make this place go. And we couldn't do it without them. And we have two types of volunteers. You can be a horticulture volunteer, so you work in the garden, or you can be what we call an ambassador. And you greet folks as they come in, you help with tours. If you're interested in doing that, we always love to have people come and join us. It's so much fun. But you can get in touch with, go to our website, stoneleighgardens.org. There's plenty of information. Our engagement manager, Sam Nestry, is the best person to get in touch with.
Great. And I know folks in the Washington, D.C. area are familiar with Brookside Gardens in Wheaton, Maryland, and they have an annual symposium. It's been virtual for the last few years, and it's an all-day speaking event, so you can sign up for that, and that's called Greenscapes. And I know that you're the first speaker of the day for the upcoming Greenscapes program, so we should give some information about that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Brookside Gardens and a huge fan of the Greenscape Symposium. It's only, was it two, less than 2 weeks, 2 weeks away, February 16th. I'm really excited. You know, there are some really amazing speakers, a great lineup of speakers that I love, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what they have to say as well. You know, if the people are interested, they can check out the website. I think that's the best way to get more information. Brooksidegreen.org, if you want to learn more. I'll be, of course, talking more about the lessons that we've learned at Stoneleigh. Some of the things I touched upon today, I'll be going much, you know, delving much deeper during that. And I think, you know, isn't it, I think it's great that we have Zoom now because it really allows people, a lot of different people, to learn from these symposia, and also allows people to have these Q&A sessions, and it's recorded, so you can go back to it whenever you want. So,
If you sign up for it and you can't attend the talks that day live, although that's better to do it live because you can ask your questions right there of all the great speakers, but you can also watch it recorded afterwards. So I encourage people to register. And because it's on Zoom, you don't have to be in the Mid-Atlantic area. You can be anywhere in the world.
absolutely. And you don't, it doesn't cost a fortune like some conferences do. So it's really, I think, more inclusive. And, you know, if you're interested in gardening with native plants and learning about some of these real world experiences that we're all looking at through these case studies, consider signing up. I think you'll really be impressed at what this will offer.
Great. Can you give that website once more, Ethan?
Sure. It's brooksidegreen.org. And
And you
that's
can.
on February 16th.
So Friday, February 16th, the theme this year is Innovative Designs from the Field. And Ethan, you're the kickoff speaker. And I notice one of the other past guests of this podcast, Paul Tukey, is speaking after lunch on the masterpiece of Glenstone from Suburbia to Organic Oasis. So I'm really looking forward to hearing him speak again too.
Yeah, you know, I have never been to Glenstone, but the staff, some of the Hort team came up this year and toured Stoneleigh. We had such a great walk with them and learned a lot from them during our meeting. And, you know, we hope to get down there and tour Glenstone this year. And so many other, the other speakers are really wonderful too. It's a great lineup.
Yeah, I highly recommend Glenstone, and you're going to need to set aside pretty much a whole day for it. It's not
Sounds
something
great
you,
to me.
yeah, it's not something you just go to for a half hour, an hour. So, let me wrap up this interview with you by asking you about your own garden, Ethan, your own home garden. I'm imagining you live somewhere near Stoneleigh, and do you grow all natives? Do you have a vegetable garden? What's your home garden like?
You know, that's a great question. So I actually, we don't have, my wife and I, we don't have a home garden right now. We're renting. But when I lived in South Carolina, I had a house for almost 20 years, and I grew a lot of different, oh my gosh, it was kind of like a collector's garden, you might say. And it was a different time in my gardening past. So I grew a lot of native plants, but also grew, you know, all these different palms and hardy bamboos and gingers. And I really like subtropical plants when I was living down.
Interesting. And do you grow any indoor plants?
I have a ZZ plant, just a few here and there, just for decorations, really. Where I work here at Stoneleigh, it really fulfills that gardening aspect. When I had a house and I gardened, it was, you know, a busman's holiday sometimes. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just spent all day thinking about gardens, working in gardens, and then I come home and it was like hard to find the time to do that. Although, heck, if I had a yard, I would do it again in a heartbeat. But I'm feeling most of that fulfillment now from where I work.
Yep, I can totally relate to that, and you know, like the cobbler shoe effect
Yes.
that your own home garden usually is the most neglected of all.
Yes.
So, in our last couple of minutes together, I also wanted to ask you about some of your inspirations and heroes. Are there any horticultural people of the past or present that you look up to?
Oh my gosh. I wasn't expecting that question. I've learned from so many good people over the years. I think that's what's great about this gardening is that people are so willing to teach, and you never know it all. There's always so much to learn. So I'm trying to think, you know, I'm going to go, maybe this is sort of trite, but I think my dad and my mom are really big inspiration in gardening for me. My mom was the first person I gardened with. I bought this Bleeding Heart when I was like 8, and that was my first experience with gardens. And my dad was really the one that got me into it. So I have to give them a shout out for being the biggest inspirations to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I often say the teaching of gardener begins at home. It's usually a family member who mentors you, and those are our first and best mentors.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I love that. That's great.
So how can our listeners contact you and find out more about Stoneleigh?
Probably the best way is to go to our website, stoneleighgardens.org. A lot of information on there, and feel free to get in touch with us if you'd like to know more. We're always happy to share information, sometimes even plants if you know, you come to the garden at the right time.
I'm going to keep that in mind, Ethan.
Okay.
And we should point out for listeners, we're going to put that link in our show notes, but Stoneleigh is spelled not L-E-E, but L-E-I-G-H. Thank you so much, Ethan, for sharing. And I look forward to your talk at Greenscapes coming up.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm really excited to talk at Greenscapes, and it was such a pleasure being here.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
African violet plant profile. African violets, St. Paulia ionantha, is a common houseplant that can be grown indoors year-round. They are in the gingerian family and are not related to actual violets. These easy-care flowering favorites have been grown and collected for more than a century and are gaining in popularity today. 2024 is the year of the African violet. They are native to tropical rainforests of Africa. African violets thrive in filtered sunlight, never in full sun. Keep the soil moist but not soggy, and use room temperature water. Avoid drafty areas and sudden temperature changes. African violets bloom best when they are root-bound and snug in a container. Use a light potting mix and repot it in fresh soil once a year. Give them a few drops of African violet liquid fertilizer every week or so. African violet's leaves can be heart-shaped or oval, ruffled or serrated, deep red or light green, and many other colors, shapes, sizes, and forms. The flowers are single or double, in pansy, star, or bell shapes, and in colors from white to pink to red to purple. Color patterns are numerous as well, from speckles to bicolors to chimeras. Once you start collecting, you won't be able to stop. African violets, you can grow that. What's new in the garden this week? Well, the groundhog did not see his shadow, which means we're going to have an early spring. And my garden is telling the same story, because not only are some early crocuses blooming, but I also have a little grape hyacinth in bloom, if you can believe that. I was shocked to see that. In the local garden tasks that we're sharing this week on our social media, we're talking all about seed starting tips, including placing a fan on low for a couple hours a week once your seedlings are up, so that they can strengthen their stems, and also using cinnamon as a fungicide. In local gardening events that you might be interested in attending, the Potomac Rose Society is holding an online meeting on February 18th at 2 p.m., and that is with DMV rose flower farmer Alex Mundry-Till of Quince Blossom Ridge, and she's going to talk to us all about her special tips, favorite varieties for cutting, and sustainable gardening practices that she uses to grow beautiful garden roses in the challenging mid-Atlantic climate. You can register for that for free at potomacrose.org. And another online meeting you might be interested in attending is on February 27th at 7 p.m. That's hosted by the Maryland Native Plant Society, and that is Tiny Forests Big Results, Testing the Miyawaki Tiny Forest Concept in Urban Landscapes. Speakers Joe Chambers and Andrew Putnam will discuss early results observed in native plant composition and wildlife use of tiny forests over time. And you can register for that for free online at mdflora.org. And then coming up in person on Saturday, March 16th, the Ikebana International Chapter Number 1 will host an Ikebana demonstration and luncheon at the Bellhaven Country Club in Alexandria, Virginia. You can find out more about that and the event and the speakers and demonstrations that are part of it at iichapter1.com. Happy gardening!
In the new book, The Urban Garden, by Kathy Jensen Terry Spade, you'll find dozens of inspiring and creative ways to grow flowers, shrubs, vegetables, herbs, and other plants in small spaces and with a limited budget. Whether you want to grow on a balcony, rooftop, front stoop, or a tiny urban patio, turn your growing dreams into reality and build a gorgeous and unique garden that showcases your personal style while still being functional and productive. With the ingenious ideas and resourceful tactics found here, you'll be maximizing yields and beauty from every square inch of your space while also making a lush outdoor living area you'll crave spending time in. Whether you're growing edible plants or beautiful flowers, the 101 amazing growing ideas found in the urban garden will turn your tiny urban yard into a treasure trove of green you'll be proud to share with family and friends. Buy your copy today at your local retail bookseller or order it online now at amazon.com or bookshop.org. Get low-maintenance alternative to lawns with the new book Ground Cover Revolution by Kathy Jentz. Reducing the lawn is among the biggest trends in homeownership, with an endless stream of homeowners looking for an eco-friendly alternative to a traditional, everyday grass lawn. In the last few years alone, over 23 million American adults converted part of the lawn to a natural landscape, and now are looking to do even more. The biggest challenge to adopting this new ideal, the perfect lawn, is knowing how and when to replace your turf and which plants are the best ones for the job. Ground Cover Revolution is here with all the answers you need. Included are 40 in-depth profiles of plants that are perfect choices for replacing a grass lawn. There are options for sun, for shade, for dry and wet sites, and for various climates around the globe. There are choices that bloom, options that are evergreen, and selections that are deer-resistant. Author Kathy Jentz has also included an incredibly useful chart that gives you all the details on each of the 40 choices for quick reference and to make your ground cover selection process even easier. Whether you want to replace the entire lawn or just reduce the amount of land dedicated to turf, Ground Cover Revolution will help you usher in a new and improved idea of what a beautiful lawn should be. Available at bookstores now and also at Quarto.com, where you can get 30% off using discount code GARDENING30.
Hey there, garden lovers. This is Ray Eaton, founder of Discover Garden Tours. I'm here to invite you all to join us next April and experience the beauty of Dutch gardening and horticulture on our Discover the Netherlands tour. Please join us and speaker, author, and social media influencer Kathy Jentz for this once-in-a-lifetime garden adventure. We'll visit private and public gardens, flower shows and auctions, and much, much more. Highlights include the Keukenhof Gardens, Hortus Botanicus Leiden, and the Flora Holland Flower Auction. The tour dates are from April 16th through April 25th, 2024. Full details and registration are available on our website at discoverourtours.com. Remember, space is limited, so if you don't want to miss out, I would highly recommend signing up today. We look forward to seeing you in the Netherlands and sharing this unforgettable journey together. Thank you.
this is the last word on Remembering to Give Thanks for the Bounty of Our Gardens by Christy Page at Food Gardening Network. I'm a firm believer that we should be thankful year-round and not rely on a specific month or season. That being said, it's a lot easier to think than to do. Life gets busy, mundane daily tasks add up, and we forget to take the time to just be thankful for what we have. Every year, once fall arrives, I'm reminded of all the many things I have to be thankful for. As the leaves that I have taken for granted for the last several months all fall to the ground, I'm reminded that life is continuously changing and evolving, and it is important to appreciate all that we have now. Here in New England, by the time Thanksgiving enters the scene, our gardens have long since left. The last root vegetables have been harvested, and our garden beds are laying dormant for the new year. Spring is always so busy with planning and planting that there's barely time to breathe, never mind revel in the beauty of the new garden. I'm always wrist deep in soil, fertilizer, and seeds. The focus is designing a garden that will work harmoniously together and yield a ripe bounty of vegetables. All throughout the summer, there's never seems to be enough time to truly appreciate the garden. There's just too much work to be done. Each day is a never-ending cycle of weeding, watering, and caring for our rapidly growing plants. As each vegetable ripens, we carefully harvest and either use or preserve the fruits of our labor. As the days start to get cooler, we happily harvest the rest of our gems. We're now in a time crunch to get them all stored and preserved before the season's truly over. We also need to make sure that we took care of the garden beds, that they'll be ready for planting in the spring. So now, there's finally time for some thankfulness. We may not have said it all year, yet we expressed it with every weed we pulled, every vegetable we plucked, and each drop of water we lovingly showered. We have potatoes and other root vegetables stored in cool, dry places. Apples have been diced, frozen, or canned into applesauce. Cucumbers are snug in jars with vinegar. Tomatoes are in jars as either tangy sauce or spicy salsa. Blueberries, strawberries, and raspberries have been made into jam. All of our months of work have been turned into treats that can be enjoyed all winter long. So let's take the time to be thankful for our bounty. Enjoy a few months of rest before we start all over again. This has been Christy Page with foodgardening.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Thank you for listening to Garden DC. You can become a listener supporter for as little as 99 cents a month by going to anchor.fm/gardendc/support. Another way to support this podcast is to subscribe to our monthly digital publication, Washington Gardener Magazine. To do so, go to washingtongardener.com. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Garden DC. You can become a listener supporter for as little as 99 cents a month by going to podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/GardenDC. Another way to support this podcast is to subscribe to our monthly digital publication, Washington Gardener Magazine. To do so, go to washingtongardener.blogspot.com. Thank you. You can find and follow Washington Gardener on Twitter/X, Instagram, and Pinterest at WDC Gardener, and on Facebook at Washington Gardener Magazine. Please take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Spotify and Apple. Open the Spotify or Apple app, search for Garden DC, check on the rate button, and select 5 stars.